Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
John Roberts is our next speaker. You know John, professor of surgery and chief of the transplant service at UCSF now for over 12 years. And he's going to surprise all of us with something totally different than what we plan. Initially, we plan on doing a talk on live donor transplant, and there's something really pressing that John has to go over with all of you, discuss about this. This is very controversial. So John.
Well, thank you, Francis. So I did send you all my slide set, so you guys will have my slide set to look at there if you want to talk about it. It's similar to what we talked about last year. I'll be happy to talk to you afterwards about because it refers to transplant, you know, the living donor transplant program. We've been doing a lot more left lobe transplants. It seems to be much safer for the donors, and the outcomes from the recipients have been pretty good. But what I want to talk to you about is this article, which just came out in the New England Journal. And I think it's going to create an issue for us over the next period of time, because it is going to be a, if we just, and we, just to be tell you, we haven't really talked about this a lot among our group about what we're going to do with this issue, but I think it's going to be a kind of a hot issue for all of us. And I see Dr. Perrin in the audience, and he's going to have to deal with this. And so it is one of those things that is going to kind of push a lot of buttons. And I think it's, we're going to have to, as a transplant program, all the transplant programs are going to have to decide how they're going to deal with this, because it is going to be a new area for us all if we decide to go down this route. Now, this journal, this article was from France. It involved seven transplant centers that chose patients with severe alcoholic hepatitis using this discriminant function, which is basically taking the prothrombin time and the bilirubin and creating a score that was greater than 32. The patients received 7 days of medical therapy, and these were people that did not respond to medical therapy, which was basically using standard care for severe liver insufficiency, and then and glucocorticoids, giving prednisolone. It was a case-control study. The controls were predicted to have a 30% 6-month survival. So these patients were chosen because this was the first time they had a liver decompensating event with severe alcoholic hepatitis. They had presence of close family members. There was absence of severe coexisting or illness or psychiatric disorders. There was agreement by the patients, support the family to lifelong total alcohol abstinence. They had a fairly unique selection process. They had what they called circles, and they had four team circles, which were the inner circle closest to the patient, comprised the nurse, one resident, and one fellow. The second was a specialist in addiction. The third was senior hepatologist. And fourth, quote, the outermost circle, consisted of the anesthetist and the surgeons. And each of these teams had to reach a complete consensus on the selection of the patients for transplantation, and they selected fewer than 2% of the patients with severe alcoholic hepatitis. So these were obviously a highly selected group of patients. You can see from here that these were fairly sick patients. This was what they looked like on the first day of therapy. Prothrombin time at 23 seconds with an INR of 2.5, a bilirubin at 27. Creatinine was within, for the most part, within normal limits, at least on the median. And you can see their discriminant score was 36 with the MELD scores of 30. And then after their 7 days of therapy, they had a median INR of 2.2, a bilirubin around 30, and had a MELD score about 28.5. As you know, in Northern California, we transplant blood type O's in the 30s and blood type A's in the probably in this general area around 30. So this is the survival of the patients. These are the patients, the match controls. You can see they came out pretty close to their 30% predicted 6-month survival, where the liver transplant recipients had a 2-year Kaplan-Meier estimated survival of about 72%. And then they compared these to their responder controls. So again, match controls that responded. And you can see the match controls did somewhat better, but not statistically different as compared to the non-responder controls. So in terms of the alcohol, they said they saw no alcohol relapse within the initial 6-month period in any of these patients. 3 of the 26 had resumed drinking alcohol, one at basically 2 years, second at a little over at basically the same time period, and one at... what's that, about 4 years, I guess. I noticed that these are almost 365 doubled, so you might wonder whether or not these were celebrations of making it 2 years. they counseled all these people that relapsed into without addiction specialists. Two remained daily consumers of substantial amounts of alcohol, and one drank occasionally. This was articles accompanied by an editorial from Bob Brown, who is a fellow here now as the chief of the program at Columbia, and basically suggesting that it's time to rethink the 6-month rule, which has been our rule: no substance abuse, or particularly no alcohol abuse, within 6 months. And his arguments are the 6-month rule is somewhat arbitrary. It doesn't really predict. It does predict for a lower rate of recidivism as compared to shorter periods of abstinence, but longer periods of abstinence predict for even lower rates of recidivism, suggesting that 6 months versus 36 months, everybody was fairly arbitrary in choosing that. I think 6 months has worked out very well for us as a transplant program. But he also argues that the recurrence of alcoholism is lower than with HCV, reinfection of the liver and recurrent cirrhosis. This has hit the press pretty hard. If you go on Google, you know, New England Journal, Alcoholic Liver Disease and Liver Transplantation, it's, you know, you'll hit a bunch of stories, you know, ABC News, so this is very topical. I think it just came out yesterday or the day before. Here's, you know, the typical headline that's in the Washington Post. It's on, you know, ABC News. I didn't see it in the New York Times, but I assume we'll hear about it today or this weekend. What I would like to do is ask you guys what you think about this, and, you know, where are we going to go with this, and where do you think we ought to go with it? Because we haven't decided. Mike's first raised her hand, so I'm gonna get Mike. Mike's one of our transplant coordinators. I just before we go there, I wanted to get an idea from you as a physician. Generally, are you seeing a lot of patients with alcoholic hepatitis every year? So these are patients. This study only selected 2% of the patients with alcoholic hepatitis. Who sees more than 10 patients with alcoholic hepatitis a year? Severe acute alcoholic hepatitis. Who sees more than 10 a year? Mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And who sees 5 to 10? And 0 to 5? And 0? Doesn't see anybody? So we don't see them because we actually don't have. We say that's an exclusion. We're really not going to accept them for transfer to our hospital. So most of these people are obviously in the hospital because we haven't been having that door open for patients with liver transplantation. So I was sort of interested to see. It seems like there's sort of a lot of people out there that are seeing these patients on a yearly basis. So I don't. How many of you would refer these type of patients for transplantation, given this new data? Okay. Oh, so how they only selected 2%? Yeah, this was their selection process, winnowed it down to only 2% of the patients that were there during the time period who had alcoholic hepatitis. So they, you know, obviously probably had a much larger cadre of patients with alcoholic hepatitis. They would put them through the selection process, you know, the medical criteria, all those kinds of things, and ended up with 2% of these patients went on to transplantation. And it was about, I think it was about, but you know, somewhere about 5%, 8% of the patients that they transplanted during this period had alcoholic hepatitis. So it's relatively small numbers. So, Mike, I'll get to you in just a second. Well, you know, one thing what Mike's going to answer for us is, I guess, is should these patients be transplanted? So I think that's sort of a next issue for us. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, my question is, are these people
not considered alcoholic? So this would be people with alcoholic hepatitis. This was their first decompensation of their liver disease related to that. They would not qualify for status one because they don't fit the definition of fulminant hepatic failure. Comments from the Francis? Yeah, so let's just, in terms of the follow-up, I think Francis is obviously making a good point here. Here's the follow-ups in terms of the number of patients undergoing transplantation. At 6 months, there was 20, and here at 24 months, there was 13. So this is started 26, about half of them were followed for 2 years.
Out of 1,300 patients?
Out of 26 patients. Yeah, so a highly selected group of patients. So
we put things into perspective about what have we done over the years in making progress. Okay? When you look at an example of HCC, okay, it takes several years for us to even consider transplanting HCC. And then we go one step, like maybe expand the criteria a little bit, do some downstaging, and 10 years goes by, people still question the data. So when you have one study that hit the New England Journal of Medicine, I mean, it has a big impact. But on the other hand, you have to confirm it. You have to really see what's the long-term outcome of people really willing to do it. I think I'm just comparing other indications.
I agree. And as you know, as I know, that, you know, the health plans are immediately going to come under pressure because you have this article, you have an editorial that says we're 6 months is arbitrary, and you know people are I imagine they're going to be emailing this to anybody that gets says we're not going to pay for treatment for transplantation for acute alcoholic hepatitis. I just sort of you can see that happening, you know, tomorrow. Okay. Well, yeah. So if. I'm sorry. So Kate Kelly asked, did they provide transplants for the outcome for the non-transplant patients? And this is, so they chose, match, you know, these were patients that they would predict by their scoring system would have a 30% 6 month survival. And you can see that in the match, it's a match control study that these were the outcomes. No, these were match controls, so they matched them up. But based on their predictive score, these patients would have a 30% 6 month survival. And I think most people probably.
About the other 1,200 patients.
They didn't have those patients in here.
You're opening Pandora's box.
Okay. I'm not opening any boxes. Yes. Well, and so that's, and let me just tell you, I mean, we're not, you know, this is going to be a big burden for us, and I don't think we're looking to open up this door. But I think that the problem's going to come is, you know, when people start pounding on the door and saying to you, you know, I need a referral to transplant center, here's, you know, this article, you're going to call us, and then we're going to have to figure out what we're going to do. And so I'm trying to be proactive here, because I think we need to make some, we're going to have to make some decisions. You guys make some decisions. We're going to have to make some decisions, and the health plans are going to have to make some decisions.
A lot of them are uninsured as well.
Yes.
It takes them 2 months to get Medicare.
Yes. Well, no, and I think that's a very serious question, because I do think there may be, there, you know, could be substantial cultural differences in here in terms of, you know, who shows up in a French hospital with alcoholic hepatitis and who shows up in a U.S. hospital. So that's, I think, one argument in terms of, you know, maybe this doesn't apply to the United States.
I don't know the study, so maybe there's no answer yet. What happens to these people after they have the transplant? Do they get well? Do they stop drinking? Do they go back to drinking heavily? So basically you're wasting an organ on these people. That's the other thing that you need to find out about.
So, well, these are, you know, they had 3 out of the 26 patients went back to drinking, 720, 740, and 1140 days after transplantation. So, you know, a reasonably long period of time, but two of them, I think, had significant alcohol intake, and, you know, I think it is a concern that, you know, but it's, and as Francis points out, you know, only half the patients have been followed now for, at the time of the publication for 2 years.
I'm very struck by the 98% who were turned down, and that I would like to know more about how they came to turn them down. And I would be terrified that we would have to do phase ones on a 98 and before we got the 2 that we could transplant.
Well, and I think that's, you know, the problem is that we, you know, if we decided to do this, I'm not saying we are going to decide to do this, but you'd have to have some kind of, you know, weaning process for the patients before they came to the hospital. Because, I think there's obviously a large number of these people out in the community with alcoholic hepatitis. How, you know, I don't think we have enough ICU beds for them. You know, just to start with not enough livers, I don't know if we got enough ICU beds at our hospital at least for them.
Yeah, I mean, other than all the points raised, I think to me, other than the shortage of organ, you know, the kind of expectancy in terms of how well those people do, I think my key problem is, you know, how do you justify the resources other than all the things we talk about to a patient that really have a submarginal lifestyle, if you will, with a potentially bad outcome no matter what you do. I mean, I think that just the resources alone would be a big issue, including ICU, but all the other issues you talk about. But I think it just become, you know, difficult to justify such a decision, I would think.
Well, you know, I think one is that there is evidence that people that have longer periods of abstinence do better. The problem is they're probably not going to do as well as, you know, if you looked at the number of people that are going to die between that initial period and 6 month period, that's going to be the argument for going ahead. But
since currently alcohol plays a role in hepatitis C patients, I'm assuming this would also change the algorithm of who gets transplanted with Hep C or any other liver disease.
The papers, you know, states that these are the patient's first episode of liver decompensation. So I would assume that there's no patients with hepatitis C in this cohort of patients, so they didn't have hepatitis C as a concomitant disease. Now, how we take this whole other group of patients and figure out, that's, you know, I that's...
You're not going to discriminate for active
Well, and so this would be a, you know, obviously it's as the gentleman said, it's opening Pandora's box, and this is a Pandora's box that would be a different Pandora's box than the severe alcoholic hepatitis. But yes, that would be an issue of whether or not 6 months abstinence for, say, people with chronic hepatitis C without alcoholic severe alcoholic hepatitis, does that door open up? And I, you know, again, it's another Pandora's box.
Thank you.
Yeah, John, just to follow up on that, I think if you know, in principle, you're willing to transplant people without evidence of rehabilitation just because the family promises to rehabilitate this person, it really throws into a whole question for any patient with chronic liver disease or acute on chronic, you know, how do we make this requirement for rehabilitation or evidence thereof stick? How do we differentiate what's really very acute in the first episode from, you know, anything? And why is drugs any different than alcohol, than any different than anything else? So I think this opens, while this is a problematic group and it's going to be a lot of weaning and sorting on everyone's part, I think it's going to potentially affect all of our selection criteria for all liver transplantation. And that's a direction we have to also consider and think.
And I think the other problem that we all have is that it's much easier for us to turn patients down sight unseen rather than have them come to and you know, have their family and the whole pathos of the whole ill patient and their family sort of pushing at you, as you all know as community physicians.
I have a strong opinion about this issue that Dr. Fang just mentioned. It has related to rehabilitation issues and also has to do with why is alcohol different from drugs, and we have to be consistent in all that. I mean, we all recognize that the duration of abstinence is really not the only factor, but doesn't mean that somebody who has short duration of abstinence should be given the opportunity without all the other criteria that we impose on all patients. So if you have somebody who had been absent for 6 months, that doesn't automatically get them to transplant. You have to assess them from psychosocial and rehabilitation and compliance standpoint. So I think that this may open up something really confusing to physicians, because we have to require them to do exactly the same thing even for patients who have been absent for 6 months or a year. They have to go to rehab. Thanks very much, John.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.